What a difference a teleprompter makes. From Fox News Radio, I'm Dana Perino.
And I'm Chris Steirewalt.
And this is Perino and Steirewalt. I'll tell you what.
Tell you what.
Tell you what. I just did a day trip to Chicago and back. Technology is amazing.
Like, yes,
it is. I actually got up at 4:15.
Yep.
Flew to Chicago, gave a speech to a great crowd, got back in a car, got to the airport, flew here, and I'm sitting here doing the podcast at 6:30 p.m. And I'm here in time for the 5.
We live in an age of wonders and miracles.
We really do.
We really do.
Did some traveling.
I was with my people.
How was it?
It was great. It was great to be in West Virginia. The best thing was understanding how little most people care about what we do. It was refreshing. It was wonderful.
we think we're such a big deal.
Well, right. And look, the business of the Republic is important, and it is not treated with the respect
You think?
it's not treated by either its practitioners nor its observers with the respect high offices do and all of that. So as a consequence, there is a mutation that is happening in the cellular structure of the United States. Mm. And what's going on is that decent people reasonably avoid the business of politics and government, which means that the people who are left behind are increasingly indecent. Their indecency drives more out. It's sort of like what happened in American cities after the Second World War. Some affluent people moved away in order to enjoy yards and more space and garages in the suburbs as new roads and new technologies made those things possible, which decreased property values in cities, which led to increased blight, which drove more people to move away. And you are eventually left with chaos. You are eventually left with no tax base and unsupportable and riots and all of that stuff. And I am afraid that, you know, I'm encouraged by the decency of the number of people who say, when you say, well, what about this or what about that? And they say, I don't care. I don't know. I'm not listening. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're at a point now where 15% of the country is working very hard to make the other 15% furious, and they're taking turns disgusting each other and attacking each other, while 60 or 70% of the country excludes itself, means that we are experiencing the ghettoization of American politics, and it's gross.
But you didn't see that in West Virginia.
No, I did see it because I saw the people saying, I'm out.
Oh,
I'm not.
You said that part. Right.
I saw the others.
I saw the people that are like getting on with their lives.
Right. I saw life in the political suburbs.
What are their biggest concerns and worries, like on a day-to-day basis? What do they think about?
The same thing everybody thinks about, which is how do I find the greatest share and portion of peace and prosperity, freedom, and goodness for me and the people I love? And that's what people do.
I always think about that like today on my day trip. Airport's packed. Some of it was people on vacation, last gasp of summer. But most of it is people, working people that are traveling for the day, and they just really want to get home in time to see the kids before they go to bed.
Right. They have work that they have to do. You know, as I like to say, why do you work so much? Well, that's where they keep the money. and it's important. But people want to get on with their lives. And just as you say, I love the walking through an airport or being at a baseball stadium or someplace, and you think all of these thousands of people. America's a magnificent machine, 325 million people, most of them productively engaged, engaged in their lives and their families, doing all these good things. And it's whirring and turning, and it turns on its own just out of the energy of these people. And they don't care about what we're doing. They don't care about Washington and public life and all of that to a pretty substantial degree.
So a lot happened while you were away. Do you remember I told you like 6 weeks ago I took a nap for 22 minutes and three things happened? So while you were away for a week, about 85 things happened.
It was busy.
What's interesting is that like you could like totally skip over one story because the news cycle goes so fast. It's just like you're over it. But the president last night, he brought back up Charlottesville. You know, he gave a speech on Afghanistan Monday night to a pretty sober crowd, but a welcoming crowd in terms of it was the military. And I think that the main message for him that night was, well, I think he had multiple audiences, right? So he's talking to the military because they're carrying out the mission. And he's telling them, I've got your back and I will make sure you have the resources you need to do what you do best, which is kill bad guys. There's quibbling, of course, on the details of what he said, but what the policy is. Then he was talking to American citizens at large, saying, you've been wondering what I was going to do on this. Here I'm telling you. And then there was our enemies, so the Taliban, and heard loud and clear. Pakistan was another audience. Afghanistan was another audience. So he has very interesting speeches, I think, those. The rallies are less satisfying to me. I kind of like watching the people have fun in the rally. I think that's kind of always fun. It's like, wow, they're people are getting really into it. And we kind of forget what it was like when President Obama was first in office. And people just loved it, right? And so there are people who love President Trump, and they come out for it. And then the nitpicking from him against the media and the media against him, it really gets tiresome, in my opinion. Are you bored with me?
Never.
How rude.
Madam.
That was you're bored with my comments.
No.
Just because I said more than three sentences in a row.
I was snoring in concurrence.
It's if they didn't complain about the media and the media didn't complain about Trump, there'd be nothing that they would not talk about anything. It'd be dead air.
It's so stupid. And it's such a waste of everyone's time. And it's so beneath the decency of all of it. Who cares? Who cares? And I was saying to somebody today, this is a family podcast, so I'm going to try to use delicacy, but to say, because I've never been bleeped on this podcast, unlike some people I could identify. But it is pornography. Our politics is the same way. It's getting more deviant and more in order to get the thrill, in order to obtain that tingle, it has to get more and more deviant. It has to get nastier and worse to achieve that same level of satisfaction for people who are in it for that. And if what you're in it for is hating other people, it's got to get weirder and weirder and more perverse all the time. When you look back 40 years and you say, oh, those, they never quote me right, ha, ha, ha. And now it's got to be rotten, lying, dirty, filthy, and all.
Mentally ill.
Mentally ill, right.
Honestly. CNN really went overboard.
Well, where do you go now, right? If you're them, now what do you say? You basically have called for the removal of the chief magistrate as a consequence of his mental instability. That's not going to happen. And now what do you do tomorrow? America in the grasp of a lunatic, day two.
Did you say, okay. I saw Katie Couric tweeted today. I think, why do people have to tweet every thought that comes into their head? But she said, after rereading, she watched the speech and then she read the transcript today and she said, I am now more afraid than ever for our country. I was like, really? Because I don't see that.
There's
no rationality.
Well, here's the sort of the thing that I'm playing with, I'm wondering about. I'm wondering if, to a certain degree, Trump likes the idea. So we know what in the past, that when people have outshone Trump, Steve Bannon, the kiss of death, might properly be pointed when they started calling him, you know, the mastermind, the puppet master behind Trump. Bannon is the architect. He did all of this stuff. He didn't seem to like that. And that seemed to hurt Bannon's standing and start the long, painful, inexorable slide back to Breitbartistan for him. But with the current cadre of generals and a few other people, there are all these stories day after day week after week now, they're really in charge. General Kelly's really in charge now, and he's really going to bring order to the White House. And General Mattis really is calling the shots. And Rex Tillerson and who's the other general?
There's H.R. McMaster.
Oh, H.R. McMaster, and that they have taken control, and what's her name? Dina Powell, and these people in Axios, they called them, it was like the Committee to Save the Republic or something very foofity. And
that's ridiculous.
It's just beyond. But one, so you'd think at a certain point there would be a backlash from any person, but especially from Trump, who is very jealous of his own celebrity and of his own status, and how dare you? And he seems to be okay with it, or at least so far. And I wonder this. Well, I'll do it this way. Let me ask you. Had it not been for Charlottesville, do you think that we would have had the same outcome in Afghanistan? Do you think those two things are wholly independent, or do you think that they're interrelated in terms of the president's willingness to acquiesce to the demands of his advisors?
I think once Steve Bannon was gone from the White House, that the president, who, as I understand, was leaning towards the decision that he made on Afghanistan anyway, but that once Bannon was gone, that the president made the decision. And I just remember watching President Bush and hearing him time and again say that once you make a decision, it's just such a relief. And then you've made the decision, so then you get, there's no more wondering and questioning and more briefings and more like the decision's made. Okay, then let's go forward and try to implement the strategy. I sort of felt some of that in President Trump's speech on Monday night. Some acceptance that leaving is worse than staying. Right. He's not going to completely define what staying looks like or what winning looks like. And I thought that maybe he would continue that theme on Tuesday night in Phoenix, because then he gave another speech today to the veterans of foreign wars. That's a speech that every president gives every year in August. So he did kind of go back to that today. What's interesting is that he goes back to a construction he used in the inaugural address, which was highly praised. And it's about if we open our hearts to patriotism, nothing else matters.
Right. There's no
unless you work at CNN, and then apparently you're a horrible person that doesn't care about the country, which is unfair to them. And you know, especially what's interesting is that the reporters that are on the ground that are taking the grief from the crowd that turns and jeers at them. I mean, I don't know what we would have done. I mean, Fox News took a lot of grief from President Obama, but no, nothing like this. And also, I always liked the way that we dealt with it, which was pretty much brush it off, especially on the news side. Just cover it for what it was and just keep saying, well, here's the facts and here's how we see it. But CNN, you know, they come out of the speech and they're on a show where you do have people expressing opinions. And so what are they supposed to say? Like, no big deal. Blow it off. I mean, I guess like that's what I would probably have done if I were in their shoes. But I don't know what it's like to be them.
No, I don't. They have bitten off a big chunk of something here that is going to be hard to chew and hard to swallow. And again, most people, I think, don't care. Most people don't care about the plight of one network or another. And also the degree to which people are tuning Trump out now. It's like what he says matters remarkably little anymore. It has been demonstrated that he can be defied. He can even be ignored. His ability to do. Let's try a thought experiment. At the outset of his presidency, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan were terrified. They were terrified. Trump will tweet. Trump will say. Mm-hmm. Trump will rise up an army in the primaries to crush everyone. And all of these things will happen. I wonder if they had it to do over again, if they could see into August and see the degree to which people now say, Trump said this. Yeah, Trump says a lot of things. That the inflationary effect on the value of his statements wouldn't have caused them to approach this quite differently. And that they would have said, well, we're not going to try to please you with our health insurance bill. We're going to dare you not to sign it.
Yeah.
We're going to, because they had one. Right. Mm-hmm. They had basically the Tom Price plan. The Tom Price, who, by the way, is Secretary of Health and Human Services, that they had a plan here it is. This is what we want to do. Yeah, people will lose their insurance, but a lot of people will want to lose their insurance because there's a mandate in Obamacare. We think it's better. We're doing that. So there you go. And tried to jam him. I think they would have because they were so afraid about.
But also, I think that he also would have signed it because he just wants to sign it.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Right. And that's they also didn't know that he doesn't care.
And then last night, I mean, September is going to be a. I almost got bleeped, but honestly, September is going to not be good.
I believe it was the Zen philosopher Basho who said that it sucks to suck.
12 working days and about 100 things to do in Congress, like 100 really hard things to do.
But I think they're going to jam him. I think they're going to do now what they probably should have done in the springtime, which is he will say, I want this, you cut the 51 votes and change the rules of the Senate, and I'm yelling at you and loud noises. And I think they're going to wait, and then they're going to fire a mortar round from Congress to the White House, and it's going to be sign or die. This is it. This is what we can pass here. We don't care what you want. We don't care what you think. This is really what we can pass among our members here on raising the debt ceiling, propping up Obamacare for next year, the budget for taxes, for the whole shebangy bang. And this is what we can pass. This is what we can come up with. And veto it if you want to. But we're tired of fighting. We're tired of talking about it. Here it is. And I really think that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan are going to do this differently than they did it last time. Rather than the spending the first 6 months as they did trying to have some collaborative rapport with the president and all this stuff, it's like, let him talk, let him tweet. We don't care. We're going to put together a save the bacon, don't jump off the fiscal cliff package, and we're going to jam the president and dare him not to sign it.
You think that'll be successful?
I think they will, because I think, as you say, the policy doesn't matter. He'll sign it. And he said he would have a government shutdown over the border fence. They're already funding the border fence.
Yeah, I know. Paul Ryan already passed that through twice.
It's already there.
We're good, sir. Have some more border wall.
We don't have to do that.
Hey, and, what do you think about did you hear any of the excerpts of Hillary Clinton's book? You know, they released some audio excerpts today, and that's going to it's going to be a part of the news for the next month. Because her book is coming out and she has a story to tell. But do you think this is a good time for Democrats to relive all of that? Trump's going to love it.
Well, and she's just dreadful. And will not stop inflicting herself on the Democratic Party. She is just awful. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, he's made my skin crawl. It was so creepy. You went to his wedding. You went to his wedding. You are a carp in the pond of politicians, gobbling at every fat chunk of bread dropped into the water. Spare me your indignity. Spare me your outrage. She's the worst, and she won't stop with what she's doing to these Democrats. She just won't stop. And as you say, of course, Donald Trump always wants it to be 2016.
Great year for him.
It was the best. Or there were like 3 weeks of it that
it's
were
like
really
being
good.
On a roller coaster for know, 12 months.
But one that the whole time he thought was going to dump him into the pits
of
despair.
As all the best roller coasters do.
All the best roller coasters do. And at the end, he was brought safely into the station.
Yep.
And I love roller coasters, and I got to ride a bunch, and they're great. But the thing for Clinton is, so Democrats desperately need to be a party of good government. They desperately need to be a party that says, given the opportunity, we can reasonably govern the country. We can avoid corruption. We can avoid both mis and malfeasance. Give us a chance and we can sanely and responsibly operate the levers of power. And then here comes Hillary Clinton, and she's always with the Clintons. It's always about them. It's always the solipsism of she and her husband knows no limits.
Mm.
Woof.
Hey, so if we go to the mailbag, I can get through some questions because there's some good ones and they're relevant to politics. Not
I'm
all of them.
Open to,
not all of
I'm
them.
I'm always open
but,
to the mailbag.
But there's a woman named Alice Hunter, and she asked for you, what kind of Democrat do you think they could run in 2020 with a shot at beating Trump if his presidency is seen as moderately successful?
If his presidency is well, that's a big if. If his presidency is seen
but that's
as
her question.
Let me put it this way. It's not kinds. It's not types. It's not styles. It's individual human beings. One of the things that politics, people who study politics, and even in a recreational, if such a thing is possible anymore, way, is that there should be a this type. Well, there are no types. There are only people. There are only individual candidates. As I've said many times before, after John Forbes Kerry was beaten to the shock, astonishment, and dismay of Democrats in 2004, they said, well, we must have a moderate. These Republicans are beating us on these social issues with the hoopies and the rednecks and the hillbillies. We must find someone who can appeal to these NASCAR dads and tell them that they also like Jesus and firearms. We need to find a person like that. And they said, okay, who do you have? Well, it would be somebody like that. Well, who? No one. And then the Republicans, after Mitt Romney, they were shocked to find that Mitt Romney would not be president. They said, well, who shall we have? Well, it should be someone who can demonstrate that they like brown people and that they're okay with that. And it should be somebody who is racially cool and can attract the female voters and blah, blah, blah. Well, who is that? Well, we don't know, but somebody like that. And occasionally somebody's put forward that seems to meet the USDA requirements. They said, well, the Democrats said, what about Warner from Virginia? What about him? Not exactly. Well, what about Marco Rubio? Not exactly. In the end, the reason Barack Obama won the Democratic nomination, the reason Donald Trump won the Republican nomination, it was who they were at that moment and their set of skills and their gifts as a politician. So John Hickenlooper, who has a magnificent name to say, is John Hickenlooper not as a moderate swing state Democratic governor and businessman? It's not that, but will people respond to John Hickenlooper?
I don't know if people will respond to somebody with a last name that has four syllables.
Ike was big.
Yeah, but what did they call him?
They called him Ike. So they call him Hick.
They're going to call him Hick?
Right. I pick Hick. There you go. You're in.
There you go.
Done. I send me the check.
Hick no, yeah. Get
campaign.
The URL right now.
I want it now. I pick Hick. but is Kamala Harris, does she have the gifts as
well,
a politician?
Well, here's another problem. Is it Kamala or Kamala? You know?
Kamala.
I mean, I don't think so.
You think it's Kamala?
I don't know. I'm just saying that there will be confusion in the country, and therefore you have to really think about the name situation.
You have to think about the names. Well, maybe it's not too late for it to change. My point is no one would have picked Barack Hussein Obama as the answer.
That name
to
was
the
improbable at the time.
No one would have picked Barack Hussein Obama as the antidote to John Kerry. No one would have picked Donald Trump as the antidote to Mitt Romney. This was not – no one would have diagnosed these things. So just watch and see who gets better as they run. Not who's perfect today, but as they run and as they try, who gets better and who do people respond to and how does that go? And can you – and the big question for the Democrats more than anything else is – they're going to believe that Donald Trump cannot be reelected. They don't even believe he's president. So they're not going to believe that he can be reelected. Therefore, when candidates step forward and say, I need you to be cool because this is going to be pretty hard, so I need you to give me some running room here to reach out to voters in the center. If Democrats aren't willing to do – if the Bernie people – and the Elizabeth Warren people, if they say, you know, Che Guevara T-shirt or nothing, if that's where it's at, eat the rich, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they do. So we get to watch all this play out. The other big question for Trump is he is going to get a primary challenge.
You think so?
Fo-reezy. Well, I would say that a certain governor of Ohio is all but declaring.
Yeah, but yes,
well,
it's
no,
true.
No,
he will. You're right. He's all but declaring. That's true.
He is all but declaring. And
I don't
probably
think that's where the party is, though.
No, but he could probably beat Trump in New Hampshire.
Well,
he could probably do to Trump what Pat Buchanan did to George H.W. Bush. A big consideration for Trump is that. Now, Trump's in danger of actually losing the renomination if he only had one opponent. But I think the good news for Trump is the Republicans will divide themselves against him.
Yep.
And you'll have a center, and I don't say this with harshness, you have a squish, you have that person.
Really, you can only say squish in the nicest possible way.
A lot of wonderful things are squishy, right? Like a soft sandwich is squishy.
Marshmallows.
A waterbed.
I had
so,
one of those.
Did you? You had a waterbed?
My sister and I and my mom and dad, we all got waterbeds at, I think at Jake Jabs Furniture.
Wow.
In Denver. They were on sale.
My brother had a waterbed, and it was, I always viewed it as quite.
I wouldn't want to be on one right now. I get a little queasy. By the way, can I complain about a household thing?
Anything.
So I'm working nights. I get home at 10:30, and I had this 4:15 a.m. wake up call. So I was like, okay, well, you can't do anything. Like, don't turn on the TV. And I just like get settled, go to bed. Well, finished my book, and I don't want to start a new one because if I start a new one, I'm going to stay awake. So finish my book, and I'm just about to drop off, but having a hard time falling asleep around 12:14 a.m.
And around 12:14.
The smoke alarm goes off in our apartment. And Peter's not home. He's down in Jersey. So I was like, oh, where is that thing? I don't know. And I was like, oh, maybe it'll stop. Of course, it's not going to stop. So I got up and
What is the noise? Okay.
Like that.
So is it telling you the battery's dead or is it telling
Well, I don't
you that
know. I mean,
smoke?
Am I supposed to know?
Well, how urgent
Well,
does
I
it
knew
sound?
That there wasn't any smoke cuz I was there. The one thing I didn't know is it was a combo smoke carbon monoxide.
Carbon monoxide.
And a friend of mine had a terrible incident in New Jersey 10 days ago where he almost lost his whole family. He got home from work. Oh. The two little kids, his wife, and the two older stepchildren were all foaming at the mouth. They had a huge problem. So then I'm like, whoa.
Are you kidding?
It happened in Jersey. I hadn't even seen the story. I hadn't seen it on local news, but he contacted me and on Friday afternoon, and I was in shock. I felt terrible for him. Then I'm thinking, well, I know there's not smoke, but I don't know there's not carbon monoxide. And now I'm awake. Okay. But I get a stool. I get up.
The Problem Solvers Caucus is in session.
Yeah. So I get on a stool, reach up, figure out how to get the battery out. Okay, fine. Put it aside. I'm like, I will deal with this tomorrow. Get back in bed. I'm like,
so
trying
wait,
to fall
at this
asleep.
Point, you're willing to accept carbon monoxide poisoning just for sleep.
Yes.
You're like,
I guess.
Okay, fine, whatever. Let the chips fall where they
may. I know, actually, that's an interesting thing. But I was like, well, it's only 3 hours before I have to get up.
I'm little. I don't take big breaths.
No, so it's true. Here's the thing about these things. First of all, I think those two things should be different, the smoke alarm and the carbon monoxide. I do not think they should be on the same thing. I know that might be artistically displeasing to people who don't want lots of things hanging on their walls. Because here's what happened. I take the battery out of the smoke alarm. I set it aside. It keeps beeping.
Now, is your device built into the ceiling and hardline powered through the electrical
system? Well, I'm not exactly sure, but I know it kept beeping.
Okay,
so I go back out, I get the stool, bring it back over, and I'm trying to like disconnect it from the wall. Nothing's working. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I've got to get up in 3 hours and now I'm totally awake. Well, we live in a building that has 24/7 doorman. So I called down. I said, I am so sorry to ask this, but is there anyone that could come up and help me? Because I don't know what to do about this thing. So anyway, they did it. But I was just irritated because if you take the battery out, right. What? I mean, obviously, I know the battery's dead, so stop beeping at me.
But
there, unless there was somebody, I guess they could have tampered with it, and then like they're going to murder me in the apartment.
No. I bet that there are regulations in the city and state of New York that relate to whether or not you can have what kind of smoke detector, especially in a high-rise building, if the battery's out and all these things. I mean, I have, in the course of my life, ended up disconnecting almost every smoke detector every place I've lived because they get increasingly sensitive. And if you cook like you're supposed to cook, you set them off all the time. And
yeah, I've never even accidentally set mine off, like ever.
This I believe. Because if you boil the meat, you don't have to worry about that. The Maillard reaction is a danger that you have to worry about.
They need to make it more girl proof. Like, they need to say, here, if you want this thing to stop beeping, these are the things that you have to do.
Well,
because if you're alone, you don't know these things.
You need a Nest.
What do you mean? Oh, one of those things. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll tell you what it's doing. You need a panel. You need a readout. You need a display.
Oh, and I have to do an interview tomorrow with another radio station. They asked me to do an interview about the White House. So I said yes. So then they said, well, do you have a landline? Well, it just so happens that I did put in a landline in my house because in doing radio interviews, I know it sounds a lot better. And so, okay, fine, I did that.
Yep.
Well, now they want me to download an app to that so that I can sound like I'm in their studio. I'm like, this is becoming much too difficult. Why do I have to download an app on my phone?
Nah, bro.
Nah.
On your cellular phone?
Yeah.
Well, then what's the point of having a
landline? I don't know. I'm like, I don't get it. I'm like, what you're going to send us, like, are you going to send an audio technician to my apartment? It's a 5-minute interview.
I think they asked too much.
I agree. Okay, obviously.
Harumph.
I watched today Let's Make a Deal. I was in the hotel room for like 30 minutes.
Oh, Wayne? I saw an episode. I watched television over the past 10 days.
That's a great show. I had never seen it. And
show.
I love him. He is so funny. I loved Wayne Brady when he was in Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Which was
he
a great
could come
show.
Up with the funniest songs I had ever seen. So he, one of the games that they play is no complaining or no complaining. Mm-hmm. So no matter what happens to you, you're not allowed to complain or you're out of the game. And I loved it. So I feel like I need to.
What do they do? Practice. Like put bees down your britches?
No, it's like here, do you want this? Do you want what's in this can or do you want what's behind door number two? And then your door number two is like, oh, well, you know what? The next contestant is going to get your prize. And now you have to choose again. And you can't complain that they're doing that to you.
This is not the game for President Trump.
Probably not. But he doesn't need a game. He's a billionaire.
That's right.
I feel like we don't have enough time for that question. So here's a question. Jerry Wergson wants to know, have you read The Pig War Standoff at Griffin Bay by San Juan historian Mike Vorey?
No.
Okay.
But I'm open to it.
People were really upset about that gift that I posted of the dog, the puppy that was in the mailbox.
I thought that was harmful to the puppy?
Yeah. I'm like, PETA's going to come after me. Like, I love dogs. I just thought it was so cute. And the mailbox said 43,
cute.
Which was pretty funny.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
I don't think so. I know the puppy. But they said he'll be scared to death of being in mailboxes. Like, well, he's never going to be in a mailbox
again.
Should
be a one-time
thing. He's like really tiny.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's like a golden retriever.
Okay. Mama J wants to know, in your family, do you hide your crazy in the attic or leave it out on the front porch? I don't know what that means.
Well, there's a lot to be said for both, right? I never knew my mom's people. I didn't know any of them. Irish Catholic, Detroit, Upper Midwest, potato famine Irish. I didn't know any of them. I don't think I ever met her brother. She had one brother. And her parents had both died when I was born, but by the time I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So I never knew any of them and their Irish Catholic, that side of things. My my father's people, Scots, Irish, English, Welsh, German, a lot of feelings are okay. It's okay to have feelings.
Just don't make
too big of a deal out of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad was a very sweet man.
We were like that too.
My dad did a very good job of encouraging, as he used to say, there are no bad feelings. It's okay to feel however you want to. It's just what you do with that feeling that matters. But by and large, the culture that I grew up in and people that I was around, it was about keeping it stuffed in. So we were attic crazy. I think I'll go with attic crazy.
Okay. This isn't really a question. Well, it kind of is. Catherine Wilcox says, would Chris ever consider writing a cookbook or possibly write one together? It could be hilarious. Dana and Chris through thick and thin.
Well, I'm a lot thicker after vacation. I'll tell you that much.
Is that right? Good food?
Oh, I ate indiscriminately.
What was the best thing you ate?
I had some cheese curds, some fried cheese curds that were a wonderful.
What is a cheese curd?
So, you know, curds and whey, like cottage cheese.
Like Little Miss Muffet?
Yeah. So curds and whey are cottage cheese. So do you like cottage cheese?
Oh, I didn't know that. I never knew that.
Right. So the whey is the milky, when you make cheese.
Yeah. Yep.
The whey is the watery part, and then the curds are that. Now, if you're making cheese,
eating her curds,
you take
and
the
whey.
Next step, then you pack it, and you do it, and you mm-hmm. there's the next step.
And
steps.
Then you fry it?
Or you can just stop there with big curds, and then you can either, like, have you ever had poutine?
Yes, in Quebec City.
Right, so poutine, those are curds, or you can, as they
I thought that
like,
was French fries.
Well, no, it's French fries with cheese curds and gravy.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
Mm, delicious.
I actually, I have to make a confession.
Hit me.
I never ate it.
You knew it existed?
I watched other people order it, but I didn't actually eat it.
Sounds good for you.
I mean, disgusting. I admire anybody that can eat it. I do.
I admire it. Trust, it's not as hard as you think. But in Wisconsin, they like cheese curds, and they also like, and they're squeaky. When you bite into them, they go. Your teeth make a wonderful little noise when you bite into them, and they like to fry them. So I had some fried cheese. Amusement park food is great, but I would say the two favorite things that I ate on vacation. Number one, DeCarlo's Pizza in Elm Grove, West Virginia. And I took my boys to eat that for the first time, which they loved. They didn't like the pizza because it confounded them. It has a crunchy crust with tomato sauce, and then the cheese is sprinkled on after that comes out of the oven.
That sounds good.
It's really wonderful. But if you've never had it, it's a confounding thing. And if you're a little kid, it's super confounding. But standing in the parking lot at 10 at night or 9:30 at night and eating that and having root beer off the hood of a car is truly wonderful. And that was truly great. But the best culinary revelation of the trip, by far. Have you ever had a Boston cooler?
Nope.
All right. Bill Hogan. William Hogan of Wheeling, West Virginia, my father's dear, dear friend and tennis partner for many – or not tennis opponent for many, many years. Smiling Bill, as my dad called him, came to call to visit our family because he and his wife Susan are basically part of the family. And they came to call, and he brought Boston coolers for dessert. And a Boston cooler, which I think an aunt of his or a great aunt of his introduced to him in 1944 on a trip when he was a boy, is a root beer float but with ginger ale. And I am here to tell you, Dana Perino, this has root beer float beat hands down.
Wow. I used to love a root beer float.
Love a root beer float. And I think we didn't have Werner's ginger ale. He couldn't get Werner's. But I see his point that Werner's would have been better. And he poured it in at just the right pace so that the crystalline structure at the top of the glass, it was ambrosia. It was better than root beer. It was fantastic. So a Boston cooler, Bill Hogan's Boston cooler, is the culinary revelation of the trip.
Awesome. Are you ready for trivia?
I'm anxious about it because having skunked you last week, I feel like the penance that I'm about to pay is going to be pretty bad.
We'll see. It's pretty easy. I think.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Okay, question number one. In the latest Gallup poll, President Trump has an approval rating of 37%. Since Gallup began polling presidential approval ratings in the early 1950s, only one other president has had an approval rating under 50% in August of his first year in office. Name him.
Gerry Ford.
No.
Okay, only one other president
has had an approval rating under 50% in August of his first year in office.
Oh, it can't be Gerry Ford then.
Because it wasn't a full year.
Under 50, first year. Is it Clinton?
Yes.
Yeah, it would have to be.
There you go. See? I told you it was easy.
That's partial credit.
Okay. No, I think it's credit because I may have read the question too quickly. Question two. In a Fox poll conducted this past January, congressional approval rating is at 17%. According to Fox, when was the last time Congress had an approval rating over 50%?
Well, it has to be since 1996. Can I say a word about congressional approval ratings, just as an aside? They're stupid, and you should ignore them.
Okay. But then we're going to ask you anyway.
I know. I'm going to say it would have to be like, 2001.
That's a good guess. That is a very good guess. It's not accurate.
What is the truth?
1998, December 1998, 51%. Isn't that shocking?
What do you mean?
All that Clinton Lewinsky stuff, the shutdown of the government, they were at 51%.
Well, they were at 51% at what point in 98?
December.
Oh, so you just had an election. So there was, I guess there'd be a honeymoon phase there because they weren't doing anything.
I know, but still, that's still high.
It's still high. That is high as a mink coat. And I can't believe it didn't get over 50.
Oh, by the way, what did you do for the eclipse?
Oh, you know who's great? West Virginians. I was on the road, and I said, I got to see this eclipse. And I said, well, you can't look at it. And I'm like, can I take a selfie of it with my phone? And I don't know. And wouldn't you know it, that there on the road, it pulled over a woman with a West Virginia license plate, a car with a West Virginia license plate, and There's this gal standing there, and she has on the glasses, and she said, "Would you like to borrow my glasses?" I said, "Well, I sure would."
Aww.
And she said, "They're good. I got them from the library." And sure enough, the Berkeley County.
So she let you look at them and not use them herself?
No, it went on for a period of time. I mean, how long can you stare at it? It's an occluded sun. I mean, big, you know, it's a rock in front of a ball of gas. So there you have it. But I did like. But first of all, shout out to the Berkeley County, West Virginia Public Library for dishing out some sweet goggles. But the other thing is, I liked how everybody got excited about it.
I know. My mom was in Lingle, Wyoming, and that's near Torrington.
Obviously.
Case you're like wondering.
And
she was with family she hadn't seen in a long time. And they went to a cornfield kind of area, and then they watched it. She said it was mesmerizing and it absolutely exceeded her expectations.
I thought it was great, and I loved the spooky midday twilight that fell across the land.
You know where I was during the eclipse?
Where?
On the subway.
Oh, Dana.
Well, the thing is, I was like, well, I had to get back. I was flying back from Nantucket. And I know. I'd never been to Nantucket. I found it very charming, really lovely, and I felt kind of out of place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Not because you are not charming. You are quite charming. But you're not Nantucket kind of people.
But I really, really appreciate it. I had a great time, made some friends. But I was coming back, and I was like, well, do I want to get caught in the traffic? I didn't have glasses.
And you went in the subway. You did the opposite of the rest of America. Went and stood out in open spaces.
I still saw people when I came out. They were all out there. It was fun to see everyone excited. That was a nice little moment for America.
And you went down. It was like Hands Across America without the touching.
Which is exactly how I like it.
That's how we like it. No touching.
All right. Well, that was fun.
Yay.
All right. For more podcasts of ours, you can go to foxnewspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this one on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Leave us a review. That would be great. This has been Perino and Starwalt. I'll tell you what on Fox News Radio.